Hello, everyone, and welcome in to another exciting Factory Filler episode. We decided that we'd release one of our older episodes this week, so you're in for a treat. We're going to release an episode in this Factory Filler. You're going to see, or hear, rather, you know, listen, you smell that? You're going to hear one of our first Halloween episodes from our spooky, spectacular, spooky season month. We're going to be diving into the original Bela Lugosi's Dracula. Figured we'd kick you off with this one. This is actually what we ended the spooky season from season one of the Brothers Movie Factory. So you might notice that things are a little different. We really dive in depth of the movies. If you've been listening to more recent episodes, back when we first started, we really broke down the movie kind of beat by beat. And so we really go through all of that. And we do an original Factory. We look at the movie and imagine what it would look like if it came out today. So we're breaking it down and, you know, casting with modern actors, modern actresses, directors, composers, and imagining what that movie would look like if it were made today. Who would direct it? Who would star? Who would compose it? Etc. So it's a lot of fun. It's a fun old episode to go back and visit, and kind of a blast from a past all way back then. It was also interesting about this episode that you're going to be listening to today is back when we were in studio. We were actually always for the first couple of seasons pre-COVID, we always would be in the same room together recording, but due to moving and everything that we've mentioned on the show before, COVID and moving away and all those different things, now we do it all online via the interwebs. So with that being said, here is your episode for Halloween Spooky Month Factory Filler, Dracula. Next week, we're going to be diving into Halloween Town, so stay tuned for Halloween Town. It's a Disney kind of spooky spectacular month, huh? With Hocus Pocus and now Halloween Town coming next week. So hope you enjoyed the Factory Filler, and we'll see you next week. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another spooky, especially spooky edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Count Gus. Count. How do you do?
How do you do? We're going to be very prim and proper tonight on the show. Yes?
In spades.
In what?
Indubitably.
Indubitably. I almost couldn't say that. Indubitably. Indubitably.
Well, ta.
We are the Brothers Movie Factory. We are a podcast of the movies, by the movies, for the movies. Would you say we are?
The movies. What the fuck was that?
I was kind of hoping in the back of my mind you might go like Marshall, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
that might have made less sense.
Yes, especially because we're in spooky month.
We are in spooky month here, yes. On the podcast, on the Brothers Movie Factory, and we're coming to our last episode of the month of October.
That spooky October month.
Because next week when we record, it will no longer be spooky Halloween month
anymore.
You
don't say.
It won't be. We have recorded many a spooky movie on this podcast. We recorded an episode on The Exorcist. We did Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. We did Tremors. And tonight, we did Dracula, 1931, yes, Bela Lugosi. But before we get into that, let's tell you what to expect from our show here.
Yes.
We are the Brothers Movie Factory. Every week, we watch a movie. We then review that film, talk about that film here, film on the podcast here. We discuss it overall. We then submit that movie to the Movie Factory. This is where we recast the film, the main actors of the film. We change the director. We change the composer. We might even change a couple factors of the film. Who knows? And at the end, we'll play a little game. Perhaps. Sound good to everyone out there?
We'll wait.
Yep.
Door the Explorer shit.
Yeah, we'll wait to hear back. I think I hear them.
For those of you listening in, my brother here, he had, from the very beginning, he He spit on the mic there. Yeah, there's a little piddle of spit.
A little spit on the mic.
Yeah. I've been staring at it this whole time.
I got it off.
He just wiped it away.
Yep, it's off.
That piddle be gone. Piddle be gone!
Yes, but this week we did watch Dracula 1931.
That's some old school shit.
It was. It was the oldest film we've watched yet on this podcast. And it definitely, it was the first time I had seen it in a very long while.
How long would you say? Since you were a wee?
Yeah, very. The last monster, like universe, because this is a Universal monster movie. It came out around that same time of like Wolfman, Invisible Man, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Frankenstein, Mummy. Yeah, the original Universal Pictures. And I would say the last one of those I watched within the last 10 years would have been Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And I watched it around Halloween time. I don't know if you remember, we had the metal, like, Steelbook DVD version. That's the one I watched. Yeah, that was the last monster movie from this old school Universal era that I've watched.
I think the last one, other than, besides Dracula, last one I watched was The Wolfman. And I watched it last night.
The one with Benicio del Toro?
No, with Lon Chaney Jr. Lon Chaney Jr.
Lon Cherry.
That was last night.
Which is better, Dracula or Wolfman, after watching?
Well, for me personally, or what's a better movie?
Oh, what's better for you?
Does
which
it
is
for
a
me?
Finer glass of wine.
Yeah, for me, Dracula... 1931, Bela Lugosi.
Is it Bela?
Bela. Fuck. Americans say Bela.
Yeah, I mean, I'm American. I've been saying it, Bela.
Bela, Bela.
Bela and that.
Bela Lugosi, good time.
Bela is a girl's name.
This Dracula film, just for me, is in my top 10 favorite movies of all time.
And that's you told me that before we watched this movie. Yeah. And that's honestly, in my head, that's an accomplishment. Like, to be, because you're, for those of you who do know Gus, and for those of you who don't, he is a very much constant changing record when it comes to his movies.
Yeah,
like, he'll be like, one week it's like, oh, that movie's might be my favorite movie all time, or might be in my top five, and then the next week that movie's not even in the top 20.
Yeah.
It's an alternating list, revolving list. Yeah. So that's actually a very big accomplishment by old 1931 Bela Lugosi, I suppose.
Yeah, my top movies, they usually stay the same. They might change in that order.
Yeah, like your top five might rotate.
My top 10 might rotate.
Oh,
yeah,
never mind. Fuck me.
Well, yeah, you know, top five, top 10, same list, in a sense, just one, I just said one bigger. Yeah, it might rotate, but Dracula would be in there. I'll tell you why. For me, this is just my opinion, cinema is a form of art, correct? To me, in my opinion, it is the highest form of art, because it can incorporate all mediums of art. Yes? That's just my opinion.
See, I might disagree to a sense, because I think in the modern day, maybe right now, I think in the future it might get overtaken by something like virtual reality, where you're being pulled into the movies.
Well,
that is a ways off.
It's still a movie.
Yeah, true.
Okay.
I guess, yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because like video games, like I'm a huge video game nerd, and video games are almost like a movie, but you also interact with said game.
No, I hear you.
So
you on,
it could
on that
be a little
front.
Different. But yeah, sure. You know, continue.
You can
continue.
Incorporate video games and movies.
Yeah, true. There are video games that play like a movie. You basically don't do anything. Click buttons and that's it.
So for me, art, I'm always been very big into art. It speaks to me, touches my soul. So if art touches my soul and I feel cinema is the highest form of art, then for me, these movies, they touch my soul. Okay. So
the cackles.
Yeah. So Dracula, touched my soul in that, we were introduced to this movie very, very young, and I became just fascinated with these old school creature features, from Universal Studios, Dracula, Wolfman, Frankenstein, Creature from the Black Lagoon. We mentioned these earlier. Another fun one is Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman.
Do we have all these on VHS? I know we had Dracula. We had. I didn't know if we had Wolfman.
Yeah, we have Wolfman.
I knew we had Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman.
No, I don't think we had Wolfman on VHS, yeah. Correct? Yeah, I don't think we had Frankenstein on VHS.
I don't think we had The Mummy.
We did have
We had Mummy. We had Dracula. We had Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yep, that would be about it. And Frankenstein Meets Wolfman.
Yes.
Nowadays, I have all these on the old Blu-ray, but including like Invisible Man and Bride of Frankenstein, and there's many other Universal horror films. Like there's a whole series of Dracula ones. There's a whole series of Frankenstein ones. And we'll talk about some of those later because. Our star here, Bela Lugosi, is in those Frankenstein ones and later in his career. But for some reason, Dracula was always my favorite. I don't know what it was then. Now I do. And we'll chew into that here in a bit. But, yeah, make a chew sound. Do it.
I'll make a chew sound.
Chew it.
That's how I chew.
You slurf. Gum it to
that's
death,
how, I was eating ice cream.
Yeah.
I chew ice cream.
We were eating soup.
Were?
Yes.
Indeed. Ate red soup.
Yes. And drank.
Old tomato bisque.
Drink wine. But we don't drink wine. What? Who am I? So.
What year is it?
Yeah.
Is it 1931?
I wish. So, like I said, art, this one touches my soul and that. This viewing tonight was very important for me. This is my pick, and we are ending our Oktoberfest spooky month here, and I chose Dracula. It's one of my favorite movies. I haven't watched in a while. I've been afraid to, and I won't get into this like wholeheartedly, but so I shared this art with old girl. And
old girl,
yes, yeah. We enjoyed watching it and became our thing to do, and things don't work out with old girl, so I've been afraid to watch this movie. It's been hard for me to gather the strength, and I was like, you know what, this is gonna be some empowering stuff, so I need to. I was hoping it would be cathartic to watch this movie tonight, and it was, and you know, I watched it and went beyond
plus ultra
and better for it. So
and we talked about some goofy stuff as we went along, makes it easier to watch. Yeah,
indeed. And it's just, for me, it's a beautiful movie.
It is.
It's old. It's old, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's some old techniques, some old visuals. It's early stuff.
It's approaching, fastly approaching. I mean, it might only be 2018, close to 2019, but it's fastly approaching 100 years old.
Yeah. And there's just something charming about these old school movies that I just admire and am drawn to. And just like Dracula in this movie, he has this hypnotism about him. He puts his hand out and says, "Come here." And you're just like, "I'm coming."
Like, why couldn't I have that power? Just look at someone. You're like, "Get over here."
When I wear my denim jacket and I go out to the club, I say, "Come here."
I mean, like,
they do.
The only person I can think of that's done this, like, stare at someone and get them to do what they want is Ryan Gosling.
Hey. How about
Let's get into more of the details of this film. So this was directed by Todd Browning. Why you left it? It was Ryan Gosling.
I was out of left field for me. The only person can get what he wants.
I was watching a video Ryan today. Gosling. It was like top soundtracks and movies, and Drive was in it, and I was like, he didn't say a fucking word in that movie, does he? And Drive, Ryan Gosling.
But he gets what he wants.
And he just stares at people, so I was like, yeah, he's good at staring, I guess.
He's handsome. Yeah. Damn it.
That's the hair. Yeah. But Todd Browning directed this movie. Really not known for much more. I thought maybe he directed like all the Universal Monster movies. He didn't. And I really couldn't find anything in my search of... This was like one of his last movies he did.
Yeah, he didn't do too much after.
Yeah.
He worked up until like
1936. If you look him up on IMDb, this is the last movie, like the last movie that's there
is
on
it?
The list. Yeah.
They did a few more. This is definitely the most recognizable, but he had a very successful career in them silent pictures. This is 1931.
I noticed that. There was a lot of movies on his filmography before this one.
He did a lot of silent films. He directed Lon Chaney Sr. in a lot of those, and some of Lon Chaney's more famous pictures. So he had a successful silent career film. This was his first dabble in the talkies.
Walkie-talkies.
And knowing that information, watching this movie, it's very, what's the word, evident, because it's, well, we'll get into this too. We're going to get into a lot of things tonight. Very silent movie.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And well, let's talk about that off the silence. So I have here, usually every episode we tell who the composer was, if the music was important. And the music in this film is very important. So much so that the original version of the film, when it first came out in 1931, did not have music. And I was informed of that tonight by Gus before we started watching it. We watched the, there's like 1.5 million versions on your Blu-ray. but there's a special version on there that is composed, there's music on it completely composed by Philip Glass.
Yes.
And the music in it is so good. Why don't you go into detail on Philip Glass and his music?
Well, so before I step into that, yes, this, like you said, this movie didn't have any music. It had the Black Swan theme by Tchaikovsky at the opening credits, and that was it.
And to that, like you said, it's a very silent movie. So there's a lot of, like, with, if you could imagine without music, like if you've ever seen on YouTube, the Star Wars, like, ending Grand March, like, they're accepting the awards, but without the John Williams score.
It's, like, awkward.
It's very awkward. Like, you could have just imagined what this movie was like without music.
Yeah, because there's whole, like, scenes of, I'll say...
Staring.
Staring and...
Aggressive staring.
Yeah. I'll say action, even though it's, like, high action, it's just movements and things. Staring, crawling, this and that. If there was no music, it would just be utter silence. It'd be a lot of people prefer that version with no music, the way it was intended, I guess. Yeah. But not me, because we grew up with our VHS of Dracula, and it had the music recomposed by Philip Glass in the 90s. Him and the Kronos Quartet put together, like, kind of like a period type of score, like music that would fit that era.
And it's a lot of violins.
Yeah, a lot of strings. And it's very aggressive and violent. And yeah, and I adore this score. It's very chilling, haunting, and kind of like a gothic romantic.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Arousing. Would you say it's arousing?
Maybe not arousing, but
is it fucking arousing? Yeah,
it definitely arouses your angst. We talked about it before when we talked about the composer of, like, the Insidious films, and the Conjuring films. They use, like, really high pitch sounds, like the voo, and with this violin constantly, like, high pitch, like, just in your ear, buzzing. Yeah, it really puts you on edge, because it adds this kind of flow to the movie, but it also, because it's in black and white, and because, I mean, the sets were all amazing, but because of, like, if this, say, they took this film, shot it today, exactly the same, shot for shot remake, sets remake, everything, it would be kind of bland. There's not a lot going on in the backgrounds of things, there's not a lot going on altogether in the sets every now and again. Like, a lot of times it's just rooms, but the music that's playing adds that extra element to everything that's happening. It's like the environment of the movie is being completely set by this music that's being played. You have a feel for how the characters are feeling, what their emotions are set on this, or maybe what your emotions are supposed to be.
It's like
set
orchestrating
off
your emotions.
Yeah, kind of. Like, if it's like an intense moment or a kind of suspenseful moment, or you're not sure, you're kind of unweary. Like the first time Renfield comes into the castle, it's very, like, you even said, you're like, this makes me feel like on edge.
I was like, this makes me feel like a psychopath.
Yeah. Like it's and he's just walking insane. Into an empty castle. There's spider webs everywhere. There's bats flying and
fucking armadillos
coming out of the wall.
I don't know if you saw this, but there is a bee that comes crawling out of a tiny coffin, like big enough for a bee.
Whoa,
an undead bee.
Shit.
How about watch out?
It.
Watch out for
that's it. Actually Dracula. That, no one knows.
That's actually the sequel, Vampire Bees. Whoa.
Tornadoes. Bee-nado.
Whoa. Sandworms. You hate them, right? I hate them myself. Yes, but the music you're saying helps provide the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just definitely, I think, because it's in black and white, back then, like you said, they were just kind of experimenting at this time with actually having voices in movies. Before, there was no sound, and maybe there was, like, an orchestra playing a theme to the song, or theme to the song, theme to the movie, or maybe there was a track playing with the movie. But now they were really trying to figure out this medium as a whole. You said you think it's the most encompassing, all-encompassing form of art. Back then, they were still figuring this out,
right?
How to actually tell a story by acting it out and not making it just a shot-for-shot remake of a play.
Right. And Dracula, this film, is based on a play. And the play is based on Bram Stoker's famous novel of Dracula. And what I found interesting is the novel... Have you ever read it, by chance?
I didn't. I've watched Nosferatu, okay. Which is...
Also based on...
Yeah, it's the same thing. It got its socks sued off by Bram Stoker's widow, but because they didn't have the actual rights, and it was clearly Dracula. It is basically the same story, though. So I'm familiar with the story. I've actually seen Nosferatu recently.
The book, very different, very very different
altogether.
Well, yes and no. Well,
they plucked the little parts.
So it's not told as like a narrative. It's told through diary entries, newspaper clippings, old letters. Like, that's how they tell the book.
It's almost like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, in a sense. That's kind of how Dr. Is Jekyll and Mr. Hyde... Yeah, it's like diary inputs and stuff.
Yeah, that's how that whole story is told. It's told from the perspective of, like, John Harker.
Mm.
And, like, John Harker goes to Transylvania to meet with Dracula, Count Dracula, and work out deeds to the new home he's buying in London, which is what...
John Harker's one of the main characters.
Yes. And in our movie we watched tonight, the 1931 version, same beginning plot, only it's a character named Renfield. Renfield, who is also in the book, but plays a slightly different role. And this, it's that portion is taken over by Renfield, and I think superiorly so. I might get crucified for saying that.
Whoa.
By these... literature diehards, but you know, like grandma said, fuck them. So but then Bram Stoker, he really wanted this his work dramatized, and they eventually turned it into a play. It was very famous in Europe, and they eventually brought it to America and put it on Broadway. And guess who starred in the Broadway production?
Bela Lugosi.
Bela Lugosi.
Really?
Yes, he did.
I did not know that.
Hundreds of times he played Dracula.
Well, what's interesting, too, all right, so we said, like, the music is just so good, sets the emotion. There's this backstory. The movie's a little different, and it came from a... They did pump a decent amount of money, because you got to think, 1932...
One.
Or 31. Approaching the Depression.
Okay.
And...
Well, wasn't the Great Depression that started in 29?
Yes. This is what the point I'm making here.
Okay.
Is $355,000 was their budget.
Mm.
And that's pretty good for a movie at that time, I thought, because it seemed like they definitely used it to the best of their ability. Like because like you said, the Depression started in 1929, and it ended... Kind of, it mainly took place, the Depression took place during the 30s. Throughout the 30s was where it really was hitting home across America. And this film was able to still be a decent success, but also to harness this massive budget for the time. Really, like, that's a lot of money for that time.
Especially with Universal being kind of in its, I mean, it was around before this movie came out, but it was as a studio still getting its wheels rolling.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, it didn't have a big, it didn't have a massive budget, but for that time, definitely. I could not find its box office, which we usually like to talk about.
It was very popular in its
time.
It was, yeah, for sure.
So let's get into the more finer details of the film. We talked about the music, and that's really where I wanted to start. But you just said how in the, you know, a lot of times when a show, say you take a Les Miserables, for instance, where it is a, well, it was a book first, then it was turned into a musical, and it's this giant Broadway. You could even say maybe it's, depending, it could be seen as a opera even, because there is no words in certain versions, or like said words. But the person playing Jean Valjean on Broadway is not Hugh Jackman. Like, they don't take the actual actor, usually, from the Broadway plays or from the plays themselves that have made the show famous and put them in the movie. It's usually different. They get a little more star power behind it. But with this one, they took Bela Lugosi, or Bela Lugosi, who was, had already had a name for himself at this time. So why do you think they did that? Like, just because,
well, you know, it wasn't even like, hey, we're making this movie and this dude played Dracula on Broadway, let's bring him in. That was not the case. So Carl Laemmle, who was a producer at Universal, he did not want to make horror films. He hated horror films. It was his son, Carl Laemmle Jr., who was like, I see the potential in pursuing these stories and this genre. So he was all about, like, let's make this movie. And he wanted Lon Chaney Sr. to play Dracula. However, Lon Chaney had lung cancer, and he died a year even before this movie came out. And there was, like, a whole process of finding who's going to be their Dracula. Dracula was actually one of the last roles they cast in this movie. And Bela Lugosi had to audition, and he had to fight for this role, actually, even though he had played it hundreds and hundreds of times on Broadway, and it toured throughout the country. Bela Lugosi, he kind of escaped his home country of, I think he was Hungarian, and he lived in New Orleans for years.
New Orleans,
and he could not speak a word of English. And you can kind of tell in this movie, his English is good, but I feel like sometimes, and I don't know if this is a fact, but I feel like some phrases he's saying is just, he's repeating sounds. He's not, like, maybe understanding what they mean kind of deal. Like, there's a line he says, like, it's the pacing, and it's so mesmerizing. And it's his foreign accent, but it's also his like old world mannerisms. What's he say? He says, I have chartered a ship that will take us to England tomorrow evening. And today, the way that's said and that accent, that is what we associate with vampire.
Yeah. Dracula. No, yeah. That harkens back. He doesn't say it in this movie. That harkens back, though. If you're growing up, you're a kid, you see parodies or, like, kid comedy movies or anything. What was that? My Mom's Dating a Vampire. Sure. Remember that movie?
Yeah,
but, like Disney, that's very, movie. Like, even to Stranger Things, where
Bob
is playing a vampire. Like, they do that accent. Like, I want to suck your blood. Like, they do that kind of accent. It's just, yeah, it's associated. And I didn't even think about that, but you're exactly right. That is, and he's just so good. Because you have to give him credit. He's a stage actor to begin with. Transitioning from the stage to a live-action movie are two completely different types of acting. And that was a lot of times Hollywood's issue in the beginning, and especially because everything was different. So transitioning from, like you see with Charlie Chaplin, he was very successful in the silent movie era, the founding of the talkies kind of essentially initiated his decline. But when these movies were starting, they were trying to get really well-known stage actors to be in their films. And you see it throughout a lot of different actors and actresses throughout that time. And so for him to transition from stage actor, where you're up on a stage and people maybe can't read your facial expressions, you're more overacting with your hands and your body motions and your just your overall voice and tone. He was acting so much with his eyes throughout this film. Yeah, you want to talk about his, like, he stares, like, he literally stares into the depths of your soul in this film. It's, like, eerie.
I want to get just his eyes and his gaze tattooed on my fucking body.
Whoa.
Yeah, I do. I really do. You posted on Twitter. What is our Twitter?
At the Bros Movie Pod. There That's our one it. Per pod.
There's your one. You posted a picture of old Dracula giving his old,
Come hither, stare.
Come hither, my bither. Who? yeah, that just says it all. It's like, no one had that gaze. No one has sense, if you ask me. But, yeah, it's very, very just magnetism. Hypnotism, magnetism, and skepticism? Who?
Skepticism?
I was just trying to think of words that rhymed. All this is true because it rhymes.
Is that what they say? In the talkies.
In the talkies. In these talkie pictures.
Well, no, yeah, he is just definitely, right from the very first time you see him, just looking at you, staring literally into the depths of your soul, it's almost like he's staring through you, and that's kind of what's, like, crazy about it. It's something, he's got his eyebrows going. Like, his eyebrows are, like, hunched down, and he's, like, just wide open eyes, but it's like he should be squinting, but he's not. Like, like everything looks like on his face, like his facial symmetry looks like he's squinting, but his eyes are wide open.
He has this piercing face.
Yeah, yeah. And he was a weird fucking dude. That's probably why.
Hey, like, if you know anything about old Bela, you told me some stuff about him I didn't even know.
Yeah, well, he was real into the supernatural. The only reason I know, I'm a big Ghost Adventures fan.
Whoa.
And Zach Bagans, the host of Ghost Adventures, has a show, or had a show, I think it got canceled, called Deadly Possessions, where he opened his own museum and he would collect haunted artifacts. And one of the things, one of the main items he got was Bela Lugosi's mirror that he would perform scrying in, which is where you stare into a mirror. Basically long enough to the point where you start seeing things. They thought that was a way of, like, seeing into a different dimension, basically. So that was something he was into, I suppose.
He's but also he was, into pumping morphine in his fucking body.
He's also into that pain medication.
Yes. So where are we here?
Well, we were talking about Bela Lugosi, and we can continue on with him just throughout his scenes throughout the film. But the scenes were put together just well as a whole. They flowed really well. I know you had mentioned Renfield comes to the castle, mainly because Dracula had just bought property in England, and Renfield is the real estate agent, basically, for lack of a better term, and comes to kind of do the deed work and fill out all that paperwork, and he ends up staying the night. Dracula maybe poisons him in a sense.
Dracula?
Yeah.
The castle.
but he poisons him. Renfield passes out. He gets probably bit by Dracula, turned into a vampire.
Slave.
Yeah, and so we're led to think. But that whole scene, that whole setup, like him, from the start where he's saying, I need to go to Dracula's castle, and then he gets taken to the castle, and he's kind of creeped out, and you're introduced to Dracula.
To the castle.
You're introduced to Dracula, you see him for the first time, and you're just kind of mesmerized by him, and then it goes to the next scene where Renfield passes out and Dracula comes in and kind of leans over his body and just slow crawls in and is going in for the bite on his neck, and it fades to black. And you said during that moment when we were watching it, you're like, it just these scenes flow so well. You said something of that nature. Do you remember saying that? You said something of that nature, like, this is just so set up well, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I remember saying this. We were watching it, you, me, and my roommate, and God only knows, for some reason, you two were talking about penises while Dracula was saying his most iconic line ever.
I can't even remember why. Matt. Matt, get in here.
He threw a penis sculpture at you.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
And all the while, Dracula's like, listen to them, children of the night. What music they make.
You're like, penis. I'm like, oh, shit. What?
Yeah.
You broke off her favorite piece.
Oh, no. They're good as new. God made it like that, it'd all be pissing in your faces.
But yeah, no, the scene's all set up extraordinarily well.
Oh, yeah, they flow real well.
They flow real well. Penises and shit.
Yeah, no, I love this, the old school filmmaking. The painted backdrops, the Victorian Gothic castles. Those are two different eras. Victorian Gothic. But just the mood, the atmosphere. I used the word atmosphere then when we were watching the movie. I was like, the atmosphere of this movie, you can feel it. You just feel it. And yes, Dracula's introduction, and actually Dracula's introduction is very chilling, because he comes out of the casket, and Philip Glass's music's wonderful, and those eyes. And then all of a sudden, fucking Renfield is getting put on a carriage, and with Dracula sorta as the driver.
His eyes.
Jesus. What's that from?
It's from Spider-Man. When she
has horrible yellow eyes. Vanish it from evil. Evil. Thank you.
That's a good callback.
Toby McGuire. So, now, yeah, the fucking driver is Bela Lugosi, but you're not supposed to know it's Dracula, or you are.
Even though you just watched him crawl out of a fucking coffin.
And then he's in his babushka, waiting out of the carriage. Hey, driver!
What if we shot that today, and when he, like, pulls up to Dracula's, there's just, like, rap music playing, like, real loud, like...
Side story, funny story. I was at a picnic, company picnic, over the summer, fucking middle nowhere, and this buggy, Amish buggy, comes rolling by. Two kids riding the buggy, and they had a radio. They were blasting rap music.
Whoa.
Yeah, it rolled, just rolling.
See, that would be great. Literally rolling. That'd be great. Like, yeah. Dracula's just rolling up.
God. How about, so, I got 100 black coffins for it. Yeah, I don't know. That's from Django Unchained.
All right, so yeah, like you were saying, the scenes flow really well all together, and Dracula's introduction is just great. But a question I have for you. Throughout this film, like Dracula, yeah, he comes to England. He kills a couple people. He's kind
who
of
hasn't.
Yeah, he's going after Nina, who is...
Mina?
Is it Mina?
Mina.
Mina. I've been spelling it Nina.
Nina Cooney.
Yeah. Mina.
Video game.
Mina. Okay. Mina. He's going after Mina, who is Harker?
John Harker.
Yeah, who originally, Harker in the book is the real estate agent. In this case, he is not.
But in the book, he is also engaged to Mina.
Yes. So Dracula kind of sets his sights on old Bascal there.
That's the best gal in this picture.
And he is going after her. He does. And then Renfield is put kind of locked away in an insane asylum, because they were on a boat. They rode a boat over to England, and Dracula were just led to believe killed pretty much the entire crew of the boat.
Yes, indeed. He basically takes Renfield over as his servant in order to sneak into England. And to this day, chilling to me, horrifying, in fact, scared me as a kid, kind of scares me now. They're looking for, like, who killed all these men? And you hear in the off screen, you hear the the maniacal laughing, and they open the cellar stairs, and there's Renfield at the bottom of those stairs holding on to those railings. And when we were kids,
I remember we used to quote that shit.
Yeah, we'd just do that, like, hey, I'm going downstairs, and go downstairs, and there you are, or something, just holding on the railings.
Imagine being the parent of that, like, walking around the corner, seeing your, like, 9-year-old kid going, like,
no, thank you. Horrifying. And Dwight Frye, who played Renfield, Jesus Christ, what a face.
Yeah, you kept saying, you're like, he's terrifying.
He is terrifying. He's so good, though. Like
he is. He's very good.
He played two different roles, in a sense. Like, yeah. he was normal.
Prim and proper, yeah.
He's like, oh, your fireplace is so cheerful. And the next scene, he's like, rats! Thousands of them! Like, just complete insanity.
Yeah, for sure. But that's kind of the thing. So Dracula kills the entire crew of a boat. Kills two women early on. There are scenes where I'm like, why isn't Dracula just lashing out and killing everyone?
Yeah, like, when they like kind of figure out Dracula's a vampire and he's aware, he's just kind of like, you are wise beyond your years.
Yeah, good luck.
Good one.
I don't like mirrors. It's like, boy, your shadow, it's not there. You don't have a reflection. Like,
he does say,
I don't like mirrors. It's a medical condition.
He smacks the mirror out of Van Helsing. Van Helsing figures out Dracula is their vampire.
Who is a doctor of thugonomics.
Yes, and he shows Dracula the vampire to prove that I've caught you. Dracula smacks that mirror and gives this evil look on
tells
his face.
Him to get that corn out of his face.
Get the corn out of my face. And he says, what's he say? Yeah, he's like, I just like mirrors. Van Helsing will explain. And then he just fucking leaves.
Yeah. I want to do that someday, like walk into someone's house, break all their mirrors, and be like, I don't like mirrors.
I just like walk mirrors.
Away.
I'm going to do it under, I don't know, like a JCPenney.
Yeah. a closed one.
Yeah.
Preferably.
I dislike mirrors.
Yeah, I was just thinking that in my head. I'm like, he could probably kill everyone. He's a vampire, but you told me that the lore back then was a lot different. Like, back then, vampires didn't sparkle.
Yeah. I mean, lore has evolved since then, for sure. I mean, they did have their strength, and they did drink blood to live forever, but, like, I don't know. Like, we know vampires being able to, like, basically fucking fly around and wreck people and just be these beasts. Which, who's to say they couldn't back then, but that's not what we were given, so.
Well, too, I want to bring this up, so there's a really good, it was just after that, when Dracula leaves, after he's kind of caught, he walks out the back patio door, basically, and Harker kind of goes out to follow him, mm-hmm. and he says, look at that, there's a great big dog running across the yard. And basically, you're informed basically that Dracula turned into a wolf and ran away. And I remember seeing the classic picture of Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman and Kate Beckinsale.
Hugh Jackman. Yeah.
But in that, Dracula turns into a werewolf. And I remember being upset watching that because I'm like, vampires don't turn into wolves, they turn into bat creatures. But showing this, the lore was that, yes, they could kind of take the shape of many things.
Yes. Including bees.
Yeah. Little coffin bees.
And armadillos.
Why not? But yeah, I thought that was a good scene too, because it was like, nowadays they would show that. Like they would show Dracula turning into something. But it didn't take that. You never saw him turn into anything.
Did you feel cheated by that?
No.
Like, oh look, there's a dog, but it doesn't show the dog.
No, not at all.
Because
it leaves it up to the imagination. Even so, like, any of the scenes where you see the bat, like a bat flying by the windowsill.
As you called it, Mr. Steal Your Girl.
Yeah, Mr. Steal Your Girl coming in the window. Coming in the rear window! Come here, I'm gonna bite you!
Can Jimmy Stewart be our dragon?
Jimmy Stewart, he'll walk in and he'll wake him up. He won't sneak up on him.
pardon me. Excuse me, miss. Could you pull up some cushion there? need to ask your neck something. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. I'm trying to regain myself.
Oh, my God. He wants to wake him up. Wake him up. shit.
No, we're going to have to edit that to a shorter laugh track.
Nope, it's all in. Enjoy.
Ugh, fuck.
Crying.
He just walks up. You're Mr. Stewart of Dracula. That would be a better film. If he'd walk up, he'd tell you. You wake him up, shake him a little bit. Excuse me, miss. I'm going to bite you on the neck. Oh, bless you. Here, take some brandy.
Yeah, calm your nerves. Yeah.
He turns into a bat and he gets that vertigo.
Do you remember in Vertigo when it shows that like special effects shot where it's like a swirl, like a psycho swirl, but it's his face?
It's a classic, like, yeah. It's when he's dreaming.
What if it was that face, but with like bat wings? Big old bat wings.
Big old bat. I'm going to grab you. I'll bite you in the neck real quick. I'll even be soft. I'll talk to you while I do it.
Holy shit. That's good stuff.
All right. Well, let's continue on with this. Let's just talk about Renfield. We kind of did.
Renfield.
Renfield. I just feel like it so should be German. Renfield. Shouldn't it? R-E-I.
But he's from America.
He's from Europe. From England. He could be German.
I never even heard the name before.
He's really good. And I think we were kind of... I wanted to just kind of touch base, but I think we already kind of did on him and how he does kind of play two characters. But right up to the end, when he does die...
Spoilers.
Yeah, it's really... something. Like you even said, it makes you feel like Quint's death in Jaws. Like he's kind of an anti-hero throughout. Yeah. Like he has moments, like, you know, he's this unwilling participant in this in Dracula's motives, and then at the end he, like, there are parts throughout where he's trying to warn people and tell them, like, you need to get me out of here, you need to get her out of here, Mina out of here, but no one's listening to him. And eventually, it does aid in his downfall, and maybe he eventually, and we'll get into it in a little more detail, but he does lead them to where Dracula is, unknowingly, or so he basically says.
Yeah.
But do you think that it was unknowingly, or do you think he did it on purpose?
I don't know, because he's so conflicted, because he was a good person, and he was turned bad, right? And he kind of goes insane, and in his insanity, he's... once again, conflicted. There's a line where Van Helsing says something to him, and he's like, you need to help us. I'm paraphrasing, but you need to help us and may God have mercy on your soul, or so God can have mercy on your soul. And he says Renfield says something like, God can't condemn a lunatic because he knows evil is too powerful for the weak-minded. And so he wants to do good, but he's also succumbed to the evil that is Dracula. Yeah, Renfield, though. I feel bad when he dies because I like his character so much. He has that monologue near the finale of the movie where he basically tells what Dracula promised him and how he saw... he's like, he made me promises, but not in words, but by doing them. Like, what the fuck does that mean? Actions speak louder than words. There it is. Shut up. Who are you talking to? Myself. Okay.
Dracula's in the house.
Yeah. Dracula? I never even heard the name before. Does that sound like Melvin and Curtis?
I think it does. but that is funny. I remember I just laughed because Van Helsing at one point does, like, they kind of get a clue that Dracula may be here, maybe in the building, and he says that, he says, Dracula is in the house. And I'm like, first time anyone ever said that, like, party over here, Dracula in the house.
Yes, there was a part in the dialogue, in a dialogue scene, that I heard you verbally say, like, ah, that's good stuff, when they were talking about, like who their vampire is, like, who could it be, and it was like almost like a moment, like an epiphany moment, like, ah. But it was...
bananas are an excellent source of potassium?
Yeah. It was, I think I had an apostrophe. I think you mean an epiphany.
Epiphany, epiphany, epiphany.
And they're like, but who could be this vampire? And then the maid's like, Dracula! Yeah. And she was introducing Dracula into the house, you know, to
so
the...
it was foreshadowing.
Indeed.
It was... even though it was also dramatic irony, because we knew, yes. But they didn't.
Good stuff.
Yeah, good storytelling all in all. And really, I do want to end with two scenes. These are the last two scenes I'd really like to talk about. The first one being the Van Helsing Dracula stare down. So there's a moment just after when they say Dracula's in the house, everyone kind of leaves to go find Dracula, with the exception of Van Helsing. He kind of stays in the lobby of the building, if you'd say. Dracula was actually there. He was already there. He walks up to Van Helsing, and they kind of have a confrontation. Van Helsing kind of tells him, like, he knows who Dracula is, and he says that he's going to stop Dracula before Mina can be fully converted.
Right.
And Dracula basically says, like, if she doesn't die in the morning time, or if she doesn't die in the morning, then she'll be a vampire forever.
But if she does by night, then she will be mine forever.
And so they basically have this stare down, and Dracula's... I took it as he was going to kill Van Helsing. He reaches out and tells Van Helsing, "Come here." And he kind of is staring at him, and you can see it just like very, very slowly. He does lean forward, but then he leans right back. He doesn't move. And then Dracula kind of turns his hand a little more and says, "Come here." And he leans a little forward and takes a couple steps, but then starts to lean back and takes a couple more steps. And so it was like a willpower moment with nothing, no words really, other than "come here." And that was it. And it was really, really good. And then eventually he whips out his lizard. He whips out his cross. And
more wolfsbane.
Yeah.
Much more stronger than that. Count.
I think it's much more potent.
Indeed.
Like
much more potent than that. Indeed.
And he whips out a cross and scares Dracula away.
Can you imagine that scene without music, though?
Yeah. Because it would be very awkward, because they'd just be literally staring at each other, and that's it. Now, honestly, though, if you kind of think about it, it may make it even more unsettling. A lot of times,
that's what a lot of people are saying.
A lot of times, silence is like... silence, if you can be completely silent, is unnerving.
I've watched it without the music before. I just couldn't get into it as much. And I might be a victim of
nostalgia. The music in that scene is, like I said, it adds emotion. Yeah. But it adds emotion to the scene, so it's definitely intense. Yeah. But for sure, I thought that scene was probably... in my opinion, I thought that was one of the best scenes in the whole movie.
I might be a victim of nostalgia there. And, you know, nostalgia is... You know, sometimes nostalgia is a polite way of saying old.
Yeah.
But it could be a polite way of saying better.
Triple H on Raw this week. I was trying to think. I was like, I've heard this.
Who said that? Gandhi?
Yeah, I was like, I've heard this.
Triple H.
Last scene I want to talk about. And I know you like the scene, Mina's scene on the balcony, when she is very struggling very much between being human and fully given in to being a vampire and killing her husband, basically.
"You mustn't talk to me. You mustn't kiss me ever again."
We're through. "What do you mean? I can't even kiss you?"
Don Knotts as John Harker.
Yeah. "You're going to scare her to death.
Martyr."
But yes, the scene, it's very conflicting. She's being very... I think you said it best. Again, a lot. I told you this. The eyes throughout this movie, a lot of them don't blink. Like, a lot of the actors don't blink, or they hold long pauses of just eye contact throughout. And I don't know if that was just an older movie practice. A lot of stage acting might do that, where they're trying to really accentuate their facial features and things like that, or if this was just a artistic view of the director. But she does the same thing that Dracula had been doing to all his victims throughout. She just holds a hard gaze at her husband, and he's just kind of staring back at her, and she's kind of going in for the kill. Basically,
I would do the same thing. She's gorgeous.
Well, that's what you're saying. You're like, "Oh, her eyes." And this is the same thing. She's staring right through him. Same way. So it was kind of interesting that it was like most vampire movies now, the surefire sign and the most common sign is fangs. You don't see any fangs in this movie. Not once. You know, you get a reference to it with the bite marks on the neck.
Yeah.
But other than that, nothing. No fangs.
No blood.
You see it, though, in their eyes throughout, like Bela Lugosi and Mina.
And Renfield, too.
In Renfield, they have, like, this hard stare of crazy, but it's almost, like, crazy, lustful, and, like,
hypnotism.
Yeah, all mixed into one. It's really, really good.
Would you say their eyes are their fangs?
Whoa. Whoa. With that being said, this movie, ultimately, you think it's a must-see for anyone that looking to get into these old-school Universal
pictures? Yeah, I would say for film lovers.
Yeah, for film lovers. I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. I definitely give it a watch, no matter what.
Yeah, for film lovers, I mean, this movie's not for everybody. Some people probably wouldn't be patient enough.
It's only an hour and 15 minutes long, too.
It's short. It flies, and it's a pretty tight story. But for some people, they might not be able to get past not having the music there, or they just might feel too old for them. But I adore this kind of stuff. It fascinates me.
Honestly, I think it holds up, too, because it's set in an older period for the 1930s anyways, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's set even
like
before.
Late 1800s.
So it's like, you can just kind of take it as that. Like, it's an old movie based in an even older time.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's an old movie that's showing its age. It's an old movie showing the age of an older time. So it works. So you can appreciate it for not even a period piece. You can appreciate it as what it was meant to be.
And this movie, it kicked off a lot of things in cinema history. During this time, other countries who maybe wanted to have the same kind of movie, dubbing wasn't really a practice back then, so a Spanish studio, they would come in at night or after the American studio was done shooting for the day. The Spanish studio would come in, and they would use the same sets, and they basically remade the same movie, but with their actors. And have you ever seen the Spanish version or heard of it even?
I heard of it tonight because you accidentally played it first.
Yeah. So the Spanish version, a lot of people see as superior because from a technical standpoint and a filmmaking standpoint, it kind of is superior in the aspects of movie making. Like, for example, I'll give you two examples. The mirror smash, which you talked about. Dracula smacks the mirror, you know, out of the hand. And that's kind of it. In the Spanish version, he smacks it, but when he smacks it, it explodes, basically. It shatters into a million pieces. Dracula's introduction. He's standing on the stairs. He says, "I bid you welcome." In the Spanish version, it's a big, dolly track shot. It, like, flies in right up to Dracula, and he says his line. Like, those kind of things that they say it's superior to. However, acting-wise, not even close. The acting in this movie, I think, is fantastic, especially from Bela Lugosi and Dwight Fry. Couldn't touch it. Also, because silent films were just kind of fading out and sound talkies were coming in, a lot of theaters around this time didn't have the equipment for talkies. So they had to kind of remake this movie again as a silent picture. Well, they didn't remake it. They just re-edited it to have the text here and there. But it really kicked off not just that, but the Universal monster features, because this was so popular and made a lot of money, they were like, let's do more. Frankenstein was in the same year. Next year was The Mummy with Boris Karloff, and who was now famous as hell from the Frankenstein picture. And then they did like Invisible Man, and so on and so on and so on. Many other to come. It's still being used today. And let me ask you a quick question, Dracula. Can you think hard, of a more famous monster?
I don't know.
The concept of Dracula.
Yeah, I would definitely say that a vampire, which is Dracula, is really like our first pop culture vampire. Now you're saying like Dracula period, like zombies wouldn't count.
No, I'm saying okay, like, even more so than that. Like,
I think so, because Dracula has since become such a phenomenon in terms of like what a vampire represents. You see vampire in a lot of different mediums, be it a like teenage drama like Vampire Diaries or Twilight, to an adult picture like Daybreakers, or like older, like a remake of Dracula with the Gary Oldman version, or even like you see,
version, you see the Christopher Lee
Dracula
version.
2000 with Gerard Butler playing Dracula. Like, you see Dracula renditions or vampire renditions happening consistently. It's just never going to go away.
And it all kind of harkens back to Bela Lugosi, who is like the benchmark, or what is that term? The thing you base the what is it? What's the word? Like the
ceiling?
Like kind of like all things are like compared to.
Yeah, the benchmark or the.
Did I say it right the first
time? I would say a benchmark or a standard. He's the standard.
The standard.
That's the word. But definitely. In this movie, like you said, you can't touch the acting, and you can't touch the overall purpose of the film, but we're going to try. We're going to try with modern actors. We're going to submit this film to the Movie Factory. Are you ready for this?
We're going
to
factory this bitch!
We're going to factory it. So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the movie and we submit it to the Movie Factory. At this point, this is where we recast our director, recast our composer, and we recast the main actors and actresses of the film. Why'd you giggle? Should I not have said recast
the director? We recast the director.
We rehire a director.
You're fired.
So let's start into this picture. We're doing Dracula 1931. Who's your director?
My director, I am going with, his name is Joe Wright.
Joe Wright.
Yes.
Is he the right pick?
We'll find out. He directed films you might have heard of, like Pride and Prejudice, Atonement. Even recently, he did, Anna Karenina, and he did The Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman playing Winston Churchill. I think he got nominated for Best Director in that.
What was his movie. First name again?
Joe. J-O.
Joe.
Just J-O. Joe Wright. And,
Joe Wright.
Yeah,
his name spelled R-I-G-H-T.
W-R.
Yeah, I know. I was making a joke with him dropping letters.
So, a reason I picked him...
Ruined it.
Is I like, well, obviously I like his style, like the visuals he brings to these films. And I wanted a classy director for this movie. Someone who could bring to life some olden times, Pride and Prejudice. Have you ever seen Atonement?
I haven't seen any of those movies.
You want to get upset? Watch Atonement. Darkest Hour is great, and I just wanted some class.
You want to be upset? Watch The Good Son.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking classy over here. I'm talking the best.
Whoa!
I want Tim Burton on this film. I was just thinking, I love Tim Burton. I do. His style is so unique to him, it would be different. I think he could do all the gothic aspects of this movie better than anyone. Tim Burton, obviously, if you don't know, did all the newest Alice in Wonderland films. I'm thinking new to old, but because I was going to start with Batman, but I'm like, do I really start with Batman to give an idea of like this gothic style,
goofy gothic. Like, I see what you're saying.
He did the Alice in Wonderland. He did 1989's Batman and Batman Returns. He did Big Fish, which was wildly successful.
How about his eye in my favorite? His old Edward Scissorhands.
Edward Scissorhands. He very did gothic style.
Corpse Bride and Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. So he just has this dark style. So why not bring that dark style to Dracula? Now, granted, that means that Johnny Depp will be Dracula.
We've already had Dark Shadows. Yeah.
But I think that he could pull that. I think he would give the tone. I think he would give the tone very well, a dark, dark tone. I would worry about the quirkiness that comes along with his movies with that, though.
I mean, he has made, like, serious films. Like, yes. Like a Sweeney Todd.
Yes,
like,
true. But that's also a musical.
Hey. Fuck it, make Dracula a musical.
Hey. Dracula. Oh, I mean, that's the whole purpose of forgetting Sarah Marshall.
You're saying he'll bring the tone, but my director has atonement. So
put them together.
So
see what happens.
Flip that fucking coin.
All right, we'll go heads for Monster. Tim Burton, tails for old Joe Wright, and here we go.
Let's see some class.
Tails, Joe Wright. There you go. The class for atonement. So Joe Wright is our director. What about your music?
My music. Well, I thought it would be cheap to say Philip Glass.
Just reuse.
I'd love that, but for our purposes, I'll go a little out of the box and away from the Philip Glass thought. One of my favorite composers is James Newton Howard. I have pitched him on here before. The old roommate who was watching along, he had never seen this movie before, and he's listening to music. He's like, "This sounds like it's from The Village." I'm like, "Yes, yes." So that tells you there, James Newton Howard, he's done The Village, he's done Signs, he's done Unbreakable, a lot of M. Night Shyamalan films, amongst others. It's those films there that really get it for me. The score in The Village, all these beautiful strings and flows from the heart that music can bring. Give it to me. Put in my classy Dracula movie.
Your classy Dracula film. My composer is gonna lose. The only reason why, it's a very left field, way modern.
Alice
they've
Cooper.
They've never done a movie. But I knew going into this picture, and like I said, I have not seen it
Don't say
in a
Daft
long
Punk.
Time. No, not Daft Punk. I haven't seen it in a long time. And I meant in full good intentions with this, but I listened to the music. I have listened to the music in the past. I listened to the theme before I came up with this one. And I don't know why it popped into my head, but I'm like, I feel like they alone could make a soundtrack to this film. And it was Lindsay Stirling. She's like probably the most famous violinist right now, wouldn't you say? She's like a rock violinist, though.
Like a dubstep ballerina violinist.
Yeah, but I feel like she could be serious and do just a crazy, like, violin, just straight, the whole movie, not stopping violin. Like, an hour and 70, mm-hmm. or an hour and 15 minutes of just a full, never-ending medley of her playing the violin.
That's an interesting concept. It's
different.
It is different.
I was pulling that out of left field. I'm like, she's very talented, probably the most talented violinist right now.
That's
at least most
exciting.
Famous, or yeah,
most
yeah.
exciting, yeah.
So she might be able to like bring something to it, a little different, make it a little more modern.
Not my classy movie.
Not your classy movie.
But
you want to challenge me?
I will accept your challenge.
You challenge me.
All
right, so.
Hey, you won all the flips last week. This has to be my week. Damn
we'll
it.
Go heads for Lindsay Stirling, tails for old James Newton Howard. I will say though, we've used him.
Have we?
Yeah, we used him on... No. We had James Cameron. Or not James Cameron. Huh? We had... what's his name?
Oh, yeah. We did like an M. Night Shyamalan version.
We had M. Night Shyamalan direct Dream Warriors. We had James Newton Howard do the music. But we'll go with it.
How about... We're going to reuse someone
eventually. I look back at that. I'm like, why did we have him directing Dream Warriors?
I don't know.
All right. Lindsay Stirling is heads, tails, James Newton Howard. Here we go.
He's flipped it.
We got Lindsay Stirling doing our music of our classy movie.
You flipped it right at the end.
What do you mean?
You were saying it was heads for Lindsay Stirling, tails for James Newton. Right before you flipped it, you changed it.
All
right,
we'll do it again.
Well, who's who?
Heads for Lindsay Stirling, okay. Tails for James Newton Howard.
Okay.
Heads again.
Okay.
Lindsay Stirling. It's meant to be.
It's meant to be. All
right.
do you see what you did?
No, I don't. I still don't.
You said it like three times that it's heads for Lindsay, tails for James Newton, and then right as you were flipping, you're like, all right. Heads for James Newton.
Oh, shit. Well, let's get into the important
yes.
part.
Yes, here we are.
Who you want to start with?
Let's save Dracula for last.
Okay.
How about that?
So Harker first, because he's the least Harker. One. I couldn't figure out a Harker, so, and I know you had one in mind, so go ahead and hit me with the one you had in mind.
Here he is. Tom Hiddleston.
So Loki.
Loki himself putting on an American accent. So it's Tom Hiddleston from fucking Kong Skull Island.
I haven't seen it yet.
He plays an American. I only say that because Jonathan Harker is supposed to be from America. But it was just his face. In this 1930 version, I don't know the gentleman who played John Harker, but his face, I saw it. I'm like, oh, that looks like John Harker. I was going to pick Armie Hammer.
Might be a little too big.
Yeah, he's like 6'5", or whatever, from like Social Network and Call Me By Your Name, and the Lone Ranger himself. But as soon as we saw his introduction scene for Harker, I was like, Tom Hiddleston.
Harker feels more like a, for lack of a better term, a pansy, like a sissy. Like he, like a rich boy, never fought anyone in his life, yeah. Scared of his own shadow. Like,
I mean, there's not a lot to him in this movie.
Yeah, but that's what he like comes across as to me. Like, what are you gonna do? Scare her to death? Like, I think Tom Hiddleston.
That's Loki.
But like you said, Armie Hammer. Like, he's a bigger guy.
Yeah.
He's got like a real defined chin, and like he looks big.
Yeah.
Where Tom Hiddleston kind of looks a little more frail, a little more, for lack of a better term, again, weak. Like, it's not as strong, but he's...
I'm not weak.
He's got
then
that...
Improve it.
He's got that suave going for him. So.
He does have that suave.
I'm all for that. Like I said, I couldn't really figure one out. Who you want to go with next?
Let's go Mina.
Mina, okay. Who you got for your Mina?
Well,
Come hither, stare girl.
Yes, indeed. Who would you like to stare at you for 10 seconds? I was going with my Atonement director, right? And he has used this actress many, many times. That would be Keira Knightley.
Is that who you're going with? Mm-hmm. So Keira Knightley, go into some of the things she's in. She hasn't been in much as of late.
She's in Pride and Prejudice. She's in Atonement. She's in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's what she'd
series.
Probably be mostly known for.
Yeah. She is going to be in that epic Nutcracker in the Four Realms.
Good.
Yes. So, yeah, she's very, very, very popular.
I put it in the Reinfeldt slot.
Whoopsie. I like her look. I like, when I see this movie and you see Mina and her performance, like, who could kind of bring that to this day and age and resemble that in a sense, but, like, honor that as well? I like Keira Knightley.
Mine is a actress that has come to fruition in recent years. She has become very popular, and she has continued to, I would say, get better, with each movie. And she's consistently taking on more challenging roles and kind of diversifying her portfolio. And she's also not hard to look at, that's for sure. That's Miss Margot Robbie.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's blonde. She's got the blonde hair. She's been in a lot of movies. She's shown her range of acting so far.
I guarantee she might get nominated for another Oscar this year, next year. She's going to be in that Mary Queen of Scots film, and she looks like she's going to be fantastic. It's going to also star my girl Saoirse Ronan, who is going to be my other pick for Mina, but I'll save Saoirse for another day.
But yeah, I think Margot Robbie.
I do enjoy Margot.
Yeah, really first big breakout role was in Wolf of Wall Street. Mm. And then, you know, she's obviously Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad.
But I, Tonya, last year, holy piss. You get to see that yet? You should if you get a chance. It's great. She's great.
Yeah, so I just thought she would be a good one. She'd probably pull off the come hither stairs.
Hey, anytime.
So what are you thinking? You want a coin toss?
I need a coin for that, because I would be fine with either.
All right, so we'll go heads for Margot Robbie, tails for Keira Knightley. Sure. I am sure about that. Oh, it didn't flip. It's on the floor.
It didn't flip. Just give her a good flip.
Give her another flip?
Yeah. Okay. You just kind of...
I just kind of threw it in the air.
Lobbed it. There she was.
Losing the lights up there. Tails, Keira Knightley.
There you are.
All right, we'll save Margot for another day.
That's all right.
Van Helsing next? Or Renfield. Renfield.
We'll go Renfield.
Renfield next? All right, who you got for Renfield? This was the hardest one for me. I know it was the hardest one for you as well.
Yeah, I was tossing around. Actually, it was funny because I eventually came with my pick, and then you told me, you're like, I'm having trouble figuring out Renfield. So I was like thanking other people. I got three, but I only picked my one. I had, at one point, of Supernatural fame, Misha Collins.
He
plays a crazy asshole every now and then when he's not being an angel in that show.
He plays like five different characters on that show.
I actually, there's a season where Misha Collins plays Lucifer, and he gets a little on the crazy side. I was like, he'd be good as Renfield. Another one. This is an interesting pick. How about old Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter himself, the Swiss Army Man?
Weak.
Yeah, doesn't prove it. I would like to see Daniel pull off something like this, but I ultimately went with another actor who's worked with our director, Joe Wright, and that would be one of my favorite up-and-coming actors. He's not even up-and-coming. He's been working for a long time, but he's now getting that main star pose, and that would be James McAvoy. He's fucking Professor Xavier himself. He's an atonement. He's Mr. fucking Tumnus!
Really?
Yes.
I haven't seen those movies in forever.
He's the Fawn in Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, Chronicles of Narnia.
He's
fucking Mr. Tumnus!
He's fucking Professor X. Like, you're like, his most badass role is where he played the Fawn, the bitch Fawn from Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe.
And he is in Split. He has all those 23 different personalities, and he is insane, and I would love to see him.
That's a good pull, much better than mine.
You're like Tom Waits.
You know what's funny is I wrote Keira Knightley in Reinfeld's slot, and then so I had to move James McAvoy when I wrote it. I wrote it at the bottom of the list and drew an arrow from what I thought was Reinfeld to it. I drew an arrow from Mina to
James McAvoy. Mess.
Whoops. Yeah, my Reinfeld, not as good.
Renfield. Now, Renfield.
Crazy. I was trying to think.
Come on, you old fly eater.
Considered picking this actor because of his hair, strictly because of his hair.
Whoa.
Renfield has, like, this long hair that's, like, slicked back or parted in the middle, but then, like, falls to the front of his face.
The hair that I dream of.
Almost picked it just for it, and because he's kind of played a crazy in other movies, or someone that resembles a crazy, and that was Leo. Almost picked Leo.
I get you.
I didn't want to do that, so I decided to go with someone who's played along with Leo in that journey, and that
Jonah
was
Hill.
Mark Ruffalo. Okay. I don't know why. I was like, I feel like Mark Ruffalo could pull off like a preppy person and then go crazy too. Screw you, you big green asshole!
That's what he
would say. Do it myself!
That's what he would say. Dude, Leo, though.
I thought Leo would be a good one, but that's too small of a role for Leo.
Right.
He needs to be the star. Right. He needs to be Dracula.
Yeah, right. That would feel out of place having a... I mean, I'd almost feel out of place saying James McAvoy, too, but...
No, I like James McAvoy. I think James McAvoy's perfect pick for that.
Yeah. I made a joke, and I said, you'd pick Tom Waits. You know who Tom Waits is, right?
Yeah, he's got a great singing voice, but he's also the devil in Dr. Parnassus.
He actually plays Renfield in the 1990s Francis Ford Coppola version of Gary Oldman.
Yeah, I've listened to some Tom Waits' songs. They're pretty good.
Yes.
I'm fine. James McAvoy. I'll take that one, for sure. All right. So we are on to Van Helsing.
Van Helsing.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you got?
I thought it was a pretty easy pick for me. Someone who can play a higher class, philosophical man who's like of very high intelligence and very witty.
Toby Maguire.
Toby Maguire. No, I picked, I don't think we've used him yet. We've mentioned him, but Christoph Waltz.
Write him down, because that was my pick.
Oh, really? Yep. Nice. I thought it was just easy. Like, he could play that role. I was watching it the entire time and just picturing Christoph Waltz in that role.
That's exactly who I was picking.
Yeah.
Christoph Waltz. He is German.
Yeah.
Van Helsing.
What's his name in Inglourious Bastards?
Colonel.
He won the Oscar for Inglourious Bastards, and he's phenomenal.
Ask me any other day, I know it.
He's also
Hans Landa.
He plays
Hans Landa, the Jew killer.
He plays Blofeld in Spectre. Spoilers. He is in Django Unchained. He's the German.
He's the German dentist.
Yeah, he's in Green Hornet. He's the bad guy.
Yes.
But yeah, he's a great actor. Absolutely. I think he would be able to play that role very
well. That's exactly who I picked. I actually was going, like, earlier in the day, I was like, you know, it'd be fun is if Hugh Jackman was Van Helsing. Because he plays Van Helsing in the movie.
Yeah.
Van Helsing.
But then I got to here and you're like, I cast my Van Helsing. I'm like, Hugh Jackman.
I was like, fuck. No, but
I had the same thought.
Yeah, no. I even told you, I was in the car driving, talking to Ben here, and I mentioned that I did have that thought to have Hugh Jackman, but then I thought of this movie, and I thought of an actor more appropriate for this movie, this version of Dracula. And it's funny, you said the same name, Christoph Waltz. He is German.
Exactly. And with that, so we got our Van Helsing as Christoph Waltz. With that, we lead into our final, probably most important cast of the whole movie, and that is our Dracula.
Dracula. Tough. Tough.
Excuse me. Very.
Because there's something organic about Bela Lugosi, because he's Hungarian and he had that accent.
Let's get some of that Marvel magic and just rework his face onto someone.
Yeah. This might sound cheap, but if I had like an actor like put on an accent, it would feel hokey. So I went with someone. When you can't get a proper accent, you make them British, right? So I went with I had my eye on two British actors. I was gonna go with a Christian Bale as Batman. He's already wait what? As Batman.
I'm gonna kick your fucking ass.
Yeah. Fuck me. I meant to say Dracula, but
get out of the fucking set, man. You and I are done professionally.
Sorry. I was going to say he's already played Batman.
He's already played a bat, so he's fine.
Bat, yeah.
A rich bat at that. So
I decided against that, and I'm going to go with a man who's menacing, has a great look about him, and he can be suave as hell, and that is Michael Fassbender.
Yeah. I mean, he's already done a similar-esque role, I would say, in the sense of being kind of not seductive, but I mean, he's been seductive in movies, but I'm saying more of the like the quiet, like intellectual that Dracula is in David from the terrible, terrible films Prometheus and Alien Covenant. Maybe more Alien Covenant than Prometheus. Terrible. Fuck them. Fuck Ridley Scott. Fuck him. He is the worst director in the history of everything. I hate him.
Nope.
We're done. All right. So continuing on.
This sparked a future podcast. We must have Ridley Scott films.
I hate him so much.
I'm angry.
Anyways, so you're Dracula. You had
Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender.
Well, what else has he done? He's fucking Magneto. Damn it.
Yeah. So you want Reinfeld. You want Doctor.
I want the whole X-Men.
Yeah, you want all the X-Men. Michael Fassbender. Let me write that down. Yeah, no, I mean, he's in that. He's in the Assassin's Creed movie, which I haven't seen. But, I mean, he has star power behind his name.
But, I mean, he's been nominated for Oscars, you know, playing Steve Jobs. And what else is he in? He's in too much to even just mention.
Yeah, no, he has that star power behind him.
Certainly. He is suave AF.
I went with an older Dracula.
Gary Oldman.
Nah. He is older, and I picked him because of the accent that I think he could pull off. I don't know if he would be able to be suave enough for the role. He's definitely older. I don't even know how old he was.
Ricky Gervais.
Nah. I was casting him based on certain other roles, and that was a Mr. Ben Kingsley.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like, think like Mandarin accent. Like from Iron Man 3. Like, some call me a tourist. I prefer to call myself a teacher.
I am Dracula.
Yeah. But, like, not to that nature. But he was a stage actor. And he's played so many different parts. Be it Gandhi to the Mandarin to whatever else he's been in. Mm-hmm. You know, he's such a famous actor. Well accomplished.
Obviously, yeah.
I thought he would be able to pull it off if anyone could do it.
He would be
able to. Because I was between him and Daniel Day-Lewis, but for Daniel Day-Lewis's health, because you know this movie happens when we I don't want Daniel Day-Lewis to fucking become a vampire, because he would.
Yeah, I actually thought about Daniel Day-Lewis at one point too.
No one would see him. Like, he'd just disappear.
He'd
only shoot at night. Like, you'd have to shoot at night. Like,
he sleeps during the day. Yeah. He would sleep in a
Yeah, he would do everything. He would. Yeah, he'd be fucking insane. He would go to Vlad the Impaler's castle in Transylvania and sleep there.
It's in Romania, damn it.
I know. Transylvania.
Kiss me. What? I'll be honest with you, 1,000% honest. Love Ben Kingsley. I don't like him for this role. I will flip.
What about Rob Pattinson? Yeah. Honestly, that was like.
Write it down.
It's like the first one I thought of. I'm like, vampires. Rob Pattinson.
Shut up. Take my money.
Taylor Lautner.
Whoa. All
right. So we'll do it. Heads for Ben Kingsley. Tails for Michael Fassbender. Here we go. I think we're split on the tails. Oh, tails.
Thank God. Because this movie would have failed.
With Ben Kingsley?
No.
I don't think so.
Because it's being made next year.
That's why we were, for Daniel Day-Lewis's health, we're not giving him the role.
Goodness. What do we got? Our
final
picture here.
List here is directing this film is Joe Wright. Which is very classy director. But then our music is by Lindsey Stirling, which would be an experiment, to say the least.
Yeah, how about?
Michael Fassbender is our Dracula. Christoph Waltz is our Van Helsing. Keira Knightley is our Mina. Renfield is played by James McAvoy. And our Harker is played by Tom Hiddleston.
It's a cast of a lot of
British actors.
Yeah. When in doubt.
Well, Christoph Waltz is German. Michael Fassbender is British. James McAvoy, British. Tom Hiddleston, British. Keira Knightley, British.
James McAvoy's from Ireland?
Oh, is he? Yeah. Well, it's United Kingdom.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is The Movie Factory. I think we did a pretty good job on that one.
I like
that movie. I like that factory. So that is it for that section. You got anything else?
I got a game for you.
You got a game for me. Hit me with it.
All right. This is a new one. You ready?
All right. Yep.
Hey, we're in October. This is our last episode of Spooky Month. Let's keep it spooky. Marry, fuck, kill. Ready? Marry one, fuck one, kill one. Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers.
And
why?
You can't kill any of them. What's going to happen?
Well, hypothetically speaking.
Okay. All right. Let's think here. Marry Freddy, because he's the only one you could hold a conversation with.
Okay.
he's the only one I feel like would actually talk to you.
Yeah.
Fuck. All right. So when it comes to Jason and Michael,
who's got a bigger penis? Who you gonna fuck?
No, that's not what I want to think about. Tell you what, you got to go with, I guess, Michael, because he's wearing the full mask.
Well, so's Jason.
You can still see his little fuzzies in his scarred up head. This is like we're going like
can't see his one gimp.
Can we go Mrs. Voorhees for this one?
Jason.
Then Mike or Michael Myers, which would just be terrifying. Because in my opinion, Michael Myers is one of. I think Halloween is the scariest Halloween movie you could possibly watch.
So you're saying you would fuck pure evil? Yep. You'd fuck the shape.
and then kill Jason, I suppose.
Hey,
I'd kill him the way they kill him in Friday the 13th Part 3.
Part 3? Is hatchet him in the face and, like, hang him or something?
I think they wrap a chain around his neck and get it in, like a log splinter thing. And it, like, sucks him in.
That's the remake. Isn't it?
Nah, it might not be the way they kill him in Part 3, but they definitely, like, hang him by a chain. Yeah, they hang him by a chain.
Something like that.
You got an answer for that one? Or is it the same?
I would marry Freddy.
Yeah.
For that
reason.
He'd
be nice. He'd be like, I made you dinner, bitch.
Yeah. he could talk to him, and at least if I'm married to him, I would hope that means he loves me. He's not going to kill me in my sleep.
He's going to come into your dreams, give you happy dreams.
Yeah, hey.
Because he can control it.
Those happy tissues or sad tissues. I would actually fuck Jason.
I don't want to have this conversation.
I would fuck Jason just to say I fuck Jason. Like, you see that zombie hockey mask wearing lumpy motherfucker? Fuck that. I'd kill Michael Myers just because he's a psychopath. He's void of feeling. He's void of feeling.
He scares me.
Jason kills because people killed his mother.
And him.
And him.
Yeah.
He feels something.
Michael just wants to kill people. Michael!
I mean, if I fuck Michael Myers, he's not going to feel anything. In more ways than
one lone tear. Yeah. After... Why wouldn't you look at me during?
he sheds one tear. Speak, Michael, speak! And he finally does. Why wouldn't you look at me? During... That would be it. That's my game for you.
Oh, shit.
Thanks for playing
along.
Yeah,
thanks. All right, well, that is the show, everyone. I want to thank you all for listening. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go ahead and follow us over on Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. We will be posting what we're going to be watching for the week. We'll post when episodes drop. We'll ask some questions here and there every now and again. So be sure to follow us over there. We really appreciate it. We also want to say that we are on all podcast formats, so whatever you listen to works for you, that's fine. If it didn't, you can find us on Spotify, you can find us on iHeartRadio, iTunes Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and last but not least, Audio Boom, who is our main source of bandwidth, I would say.
Of the pod tree.
Of the pod, where we post and publish at.
We on Google Play by chance?
We are on Google Play as well. I knew I was forgetting one. So go ahead and you can try out those as well. Give us that subscribe. And also, we would like to thank all of you who have been listening. We greatly appreciate your listens. We love the feedback you've been giving us. We hope you enjoyed this episode. But until next week, that's a wrap. What?
He doesn't sneak up on you. He doesn't wake you up.
He wakes you up. Hey, wake up there, Mitch. I'm going to bite you on the neck. All right. Well, until next week, we'll try it again. That's a wrap. Brothers?
Brothers.
Brothers!